from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
As Synod Fathers in Rome make their final recommendations to Pope Francis, Jeanette DeMello and Register columnist Father Raymond D'Azusa take you on a detailed tour of the Synod and what happens next. Also, celebrate with us the 500th anniversary of the life of St. Teresa of Avila. Dan Burke and Sharon Lee Giganti explained the difference between contemplation and centering prayer. Welcome to Register Radio, a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm the producer of the show, Elena Rodriguez, sitting in this week for Tom Price. Our editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register, Jeanette DeMello, is right here and ready for insightful conversations. Thanks for joining us, Jeanette. Our first guest is Father Raymond J. D'Azusa, a priest of the Archdiocese of Kingston in Ontario, where he serves as the Catholic chaplain at Queen's University. He is the editor-in-chief of Convivian magazine. He was the Register's Rome correspondent from 1998 to 2003. Now he's a regular columnist for the Register, and he's currently reporting on the Synod from Rome. Father D'Azusa and Jeanette DeMello are here to give us a detailed tour of the Synod. Jeanette?
Father Raymond, it is great to have you on Register Radio. We're here talking about the Synod, and you are in Rome, there live, witnessing at least as close as possible the events of this Synod. And we're having this conversation a few days before the Synod concludes on October 24th, with closing ceremonies on the 25th. And so we're talking about what is at stake in this final, the third week of the Synod.
Well, it is. Yes, I'm here in Rome, so it's good to talk with you and to share with listeners and also readers of our newspaper and website the news of the Synod, which has garnered a lot of attention.
Yes.
Well, this last week, these last days are actually where everything comes to fruition, because the basic sort of methodology of a Synod is that there's a preparatory elaboration of the theme. Then the Synod Fathers gather and they discuss it both in large, like all together in a plenary session. And then they break into small language groups, which are about, 20 or 30 people. And they discuss it in detail. And then all of those discussions are sort of edited into a revised document, final document. And that's what's going to happen in the next few days. So really all of the work, all of the debate, all of the even controversy of the past 2 weeks is going to come to fruition in the next few days. And when the Synod Fathers gather on Saturday evening, they'll vote paragraph by paragraph on that document, and then all of that will be handed over to the Holy Father. So so at this precise moment, we don't know what that final document's going to look like, and if it is, by most of the Synod Fathers agreed that it reflects their discussions and their priorities, then it will be, I think, a rather smooth last few days. If it doesn't, and it seems that it somehow doesn't reflect that, then it could be a very fiery few days. But
of course,
we don't know that yet.
We don't know at this point in time, so there's a lot to anticipate. You know, of course, as usual, the best is saved for last in terms of the discussion, or in this case, we could say perhaps the most controversial topic has been saved really for last, and that is the topic, the question of communion for the divorced and civilly remarried. How are discussions going so far on that topic?
Well, I think it's widely acknowledged that quite a large majority of the Synod Fathers would be against changing that practice because they feel that the practice of the Church is the logical consequence of the doctrines of the Church about the nature of marriage, its indissolubility, and also the nature of Holy Communion and the Sacrament of Reconciliation. One of the things I think is important to realize on that question is that the current practice is not something that anybody sort of takes delight in by saying, oh, we're delighted that certain people or people in certain circumstances who aren't able to receive the sacraments. The only reason this practice exists is because to maintain the Church's teaching on marriage, on the Eucharist, on sacramental forgiveness, and so forth, this becomes the consequence. So That's important because I think sometimes people have got the sense that those in favor of the current practice somehow want to administer a kind of, or take delight in a kind of a punishment.
Right.
And that's not really at all what this is about. That all being said, it's been thoroughly discussed. There have been some bishops who've made very clear requests for it to change, but the majority, quite a large majority, I think, are not in favor of that route. I think what's likely to emerge is that there won't be any call for a particular change in doctrine or practice, but there will be a kind of a very sometimes common Roman solution to these things, which is a call for sort of further research and study. So I wouldn't be surprised to see that no particular step is recommended, but further study and a general attitude of compassion to people who find themselves in that situation. But as again, we'll have to wait and see. But that seems to be where things are headed at the moment.
You know, in one of your columns that you've written, and you've written for other papers aside from the National Catholic Register in these weeks, this important time, one of the columns that you wrote talked about this very question, the question of communion, and whether the practice that we currently have with, regarding the divorce is a matter of doctrine or a matter of disciplinary a discipline of the church, I guess I should say, not disciplinary, but a
right.
discipline of the church. And really, it's that question that's being debated. Do you think by continuing the discussion that is not answering that very question, whether it's doctrine or discipline?
My preference would be that a clear answer comes out of the synod.
Yeah.
That's what I wrote. But once you determine, that question really... That question really is the preliminary question. If it's a doctrinal matter or inextricably linked to doctrine, then it cannot change, and there's no point to further discussions of how it might change.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If you think it's only disciplinary, then you can discuss how it might change. So that question really has to be answered. But because to say it's doctrinal, which is, I think, the easier argument to make based on recent church teaching, once you say it's doctrinal... then the argument really, or the discussion, has been closed. So I prefer that, because I think it would be clear. I think if you were to decide it was only disciplinary, that would actually open up the argument, but I think that's a harder argument to make.
Sure. This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio, and I'm speaking with Father Raymond D'Souza, who is there in Rome covering the Synod. You can hear he's on the street here in Rome. He's really covering this live for us, and it's a wonderful opportunity to get his insights on what is happening in these final days of the Synod, what is at stake, and to discuss the process itself of this Synod. One of the common themes, I think, that has come up in the course of these 3 weeks and really this past year as we have led up to this Synod is the idea of accommodation versus accompaniment. And I think that's a really important idea that, Father D'Souza, you have explored in some of your writings, and I love how clear you have made these concepts. Can you bring these concepts to our listeners right now, the idea of accommodation versus accompaniment?
Right. Well, it's good to be with you, and you're right, you can hear the traffic in the background. One of the interesting things about Rome is that it's almost an entirely mobile phone city. So back in the United States or Canada, you know, when we do radio interviews, we always say we'll use a landline, but here we use mobile phones, and whatever's going on out the window is what you hear, so there you are.
Absolutely.
but it's been a very critical discussion, a very fruitful discussion. One of the Holy Father's favorite themes is accompaniment, to accompany. And in fact, at last year's Synod, this theme emerged, really based around the story, biblical story of Emmaus, of the Lord Jesus on the evening of the resurrection, accompanying the disciples on the road to Emmaus. But the question that arises from that is, what does it mean to accompany? For what purpose do you accompany? And who are you accompanying? And the Emmaus story gives various insights into that. One is that Jesus accompanies the disciples in a moment of discouragement for them. He draws close to them. He asks them what they're doing. He takes an interest in what they're saying. He enters into their path, as it were. But of course, then he actually rebukes them for their lack of faith, explains to them what the Paschal Mystery is all about, and then they return to Jerusalem having been converted. So, you know, that's Jesus' ministry, and it's hard for us as, you know, disciples to replicate that entirely. So probably all of us fail in one degree or the other. Maybe we accompany too much and don't explain enough. Maybe we rebuke too quickly and don't accompany first. Maybe we don't explain things very well. Maybe we don't enliven those hearts so that they can have a conversion and turn back to Jerusalem. So there are, you know, I think anybody who looked at the story of Jesus to Emmaus would say, well, do I accompany the way that he does?
Right.
And would find some lack in that. But I do think it's important to say that what Jesus is not doing on the road to Emmaus is accompanying without a purpose. He's
right.
accompanying with a real purpose, which is to restore the hope of the disciples by having them return, turn around, literally convert, and cease going out into the night and return to Jerusalem, where the joy of the resurrection is being proclaimed. Now, one word you could use for accompaniment without purpose is accommodation, which is that you seek simply to make comfortable a difficult situation by accommodating people. Now, accommodation in and of itself is not a bad thing. If you think if you're sort of without a place to stay, that's precisely what you need, is accommodation. But the question really before the pastors of the church is, are we accompanying, as Jesus does, towards a fuller understanding of his saving gospel, or are we simply accommodating? And that discussion really has sort of been, I think, underlying much of the debate on specifics, but also the general approach of the Synod Fathers. So, but those two concepts, I think, are very important to examine. And what accompaniment really means, I think, is a very central question here of the Synod.
Father D'Souza, we are out of time, but I think that last word about the idea of accompaniment is really what we should be focusing on and looking for as we read the final document when that is finally decided upon. We thank you very much for your reporting and for all that you've done to bring this journey of the Synod to our readers.
Good. Well, thank you, and thanks for taking time to talk to me on the phone. I hope it wasn't too loud here out in on the streets of the Synod, as it were.
Your voice is loud and clear.
Yes, we're going out to the peripheries here. We're not staying inside.
That's right.
Very good. Thanks, Jeanette.
And thank you both, Father Raymond D'Souza and Jeanette DeMello. In a moment, we'll talk about what is the difference between centering prayer and contemplative prayer. We will empower you with the facts. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Stay tuned.
In today's world, we have all kinds of misinformation and even disinformation about Christianity, Catholicism, and religion in general. And we need a source that is going to give us direct quotations and authentic news about what is going on in the church, so we know what the Pope really said and not what the media said he said. We need to know what the Synod is doing, what the encyclicals mean, in order to be able to give the facts of our faith. For that reason, we need the National Catholic Register, which will give us the good news along with the hard news of our world today. And in that way, we can have what we need to go out to our world and give them the good news of Jesus Christ.
For a free 6-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register, or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. Along with Jeanette DeMello and Dan Burke, I'm Elena Rodriguez. The Register's Executive Director, Dan Burke, will conduct our next conversation. October concludes the celebration of the 500th anniversary of the life of St. Teresa of Avila, a doctor of the church and a great teacher of prayer. To mark the occasion, the Register took up a comparison of contemplative prayer in the tradition of St. Teresa and the popular but questionable form of centering prayer in the commentary, Why Centering Prayer Falls Short of True Intimacy with Christ. In this Best of Register Radio segment, Dan Burke and Sharon Lee Giganti debunk the myths around centering prayer. Dan?
Sharon, it's great to have you here to talk about something that you've been working on for probably a decade now.
Yes.
It's a serious issue in the church, and that is this phenomenon of centering prayer, false prayer practices, and the theology that surrounds it. It's done a lot of damage to the church, a lot of damage to those who are seeking to authentically deepen their relationship with Christ or sincerely deepen their relationship with Christ. But before we dive into specifics about what are the problems with centering prayer and the movement and different aspects of the movement, tell us a bit about what centering prayer is exactly.
Well, they claim that it's a method of silent prayer that can help to prepare you, they say, for the gift of contemplation. And the guidelines are so simple, they'll basically say how you do centering prayer is to sit quietly, you can close your eyes quietly, and they'll say whenever a thought arises as you're just resting in the presence of God, and you sit with the intention, they say, of just wanting to rest in God's presence. If a thought arises, they'll say you simply don't get engaged with it, just simply turn from the thought and return to your sacred word. They'll give you a word to repeat. And the word is there for you, they say, so that if you do get attracted to thinking and thoughts, then it's like an anchor, they'll say, to bring you away from the thought and back to your sacred word. So I think they feel that by doing this kind of, and they call it letting go of thoughts. Thoughts will come, they say, but you just let them go and return to your sacred word. I think they feel that by bypassing the thinking process, you're going to come into some kind of union with God through, it seems, an altered state of consciousness, because you're bypassing the thinking process. But they really won't describe it that way. They don't say we're seeking an altered state of consciousness, but it amounts to the same thing. And the problem that I see here is, instead of saying, if a thought should come, return to your sacred word, the problem is they say all thoughts. You are not to engage in any thought. So as you're sitting in the presence of God and wanting to come into union with Him, if you should have some kind of an idea or a vision, or you feel that God has impressed something upon your heart or mind, you are to turn from that. You're to turn from all thoughts.
Well, in fact, both of us have attended centering prayer retreats and workshops and things like that. And I did that here in Birmingham not too long ago. Just as part of our research together on this,
yes,
on a project that we'll talk about in the future. But basically, I asked the question during the program, because the claim is you're to get closer to God.
And yes.
So I said, so that's great. That's a good intention. What if God engages with me during prayer?
Yes.
And I was told to let it go, meaning if God shows up, the implications are very clear. If God shows up and attempts to communicate with me, I'm to push him away, let it go. I got the
yes,
hand signals are almost, from the instructor, like pushing away.
But they describe it.
Right, is let it go. And this is, of course, not in any way reflective of Christian concept of prayer, a communion of persons who are interacting, listening, speaking as persons would, even though one person is perfect, separate God, creator.
Yeah. And a spirit, so it's perhaps not visible.
Right.
But, a lot of people who understand the problems of this supposed prayer method, they have said it feels like putting God on hold. I have to return to my sacred word. In one of the sessions I attended, and I found there are a couple centering prayer commissioners, they call themselves commissioned presenters of the prayer method. They like to repeat the story, they say, that Father Keating tells, and they kind of chuckle.
Father Keating is Father Thomas Keating.
Yes.
The founder, the grand poobah of centering prayer.
Absolutely, yes. He founded Contemplative Outreach, which he uses as a vehicle to go
spread
into parishes and have commissioned presenters teach centering prayer. Well, they like to repeat this little story that they say he tells, that when you're in centering prayer, if Jesus himself were to come down on a cloud and appear to you in all his glory, turn ever so gently back to your sacred word.
This is Dan Burke with Register Radio, and I'm here with Sharon Lee Gigante, who is a renowned author, speaker, expert on the New Age movement, on centering prayer. Her website is newagedeception.com to learn more. But Sharon, so we get a little sense of what centering prayer is.
Yes.
A lot of the common claims made in these groups and in the myriad of books that we've both explored is that it is in keeping with the tradition in particular of St. Teresa of Avila and that sort of thing. What's interesting is during St. Teresa of Avila's time, she was challenged by a group that said, well, you should do something like what's taught in centering prayer, which is that you should let thoughts go, or you should not be. And she was vehemently against it.
Yes.
Adamantly against it. She conferred with the writings of St. Peter of Alcantara, who was her spiritual director, and she relates in the Interior Castles that he agrees with her, not with them.
Exactly. I mean, she had already battled this.
Right. So it's just an old problem resurfacing.
Yes.
Well-intended, I think, to help people grow deeper in the spiritual life, but misguided in so many ways with respect to proper theology and understanding of God, proper anthropology. But let's turn a corner here and talk a little bit about contemplative outreach. And I think there's some scary things happening with this organization.
Yes.
You know, the initial workshops, which we've both been to, are very orthodox in their initial presentation. But in both of our experience, once you get invited to the next level, into the next door, you begin to hear things that are much more divergent from church teaching. So there's this outer veneer of faithfulness that hides really a dark secret, which is that there's no real mooring in church tradition the way we would we see it. So talk to us a little bit about what goes on in the second and third layers of
right. And see, this is something I've been tackling since I first started investigating the whole topic of centering prayer, contemplative outreach, and the centering prayer movement. Usually I get questions, what is wrong with centering prayer? You know, how is centering prayer wrong? And as soon as I help them understand that as the prayer method itself is problematic, this group, contemplative outreach, that will come into your parish to attempt to teach you centering prayer is a much bigger concern. Because like you said, this organization, Contemplative Outreach, was founded by Father Thomas Keating so that it could be a resource center and a support place and a place where commissioned trainers will come teach you centering prayer. But what happens when you, and I've gone through their six-week program and have attended several of their events my research.
And you've interviewed a number of their key...
of their key leaders. And what winds up happening is that in their resource books, in their leaflets, on their website, their links, and their newsletters, it's the spirituality that they're forwarding that is the real issue.
So let's talk about a concrete example.
Yes.
And the workshop you attended on Julian of Norwich with Father Menninger, who is a mainstay with Contemplative Outreach, who was sponsored to bring him in to speak.
Yes, he was one of the three architects of the centering prayer method. Those three would be Father Menninger, Father Thomas Keating, and Father Basil Pennington. And so because he's one of the original architects of centering prayer and its movement, they were so excited to have him come talk with us. And he has given talks for decades through Contemplative Outreach. Unfortunately, usually he's teaching Enneagram classes and still does here and there. But in this time, he was giving a talk on Julian of Norwich. And so I went just to hear what I might hear from Father Menninger. And sure enough, even though the topic was this mystic known as Julian of Norwich, he wound up throughout the three-hour presentation, and there were breaks, he would assert spiritual assertions that were very far from Catholic truth.
So give me a list of key.
Oh, he said things like, God does not condemn. If God is love, then God is not a judge. And he repeated many times, God is not a judge. He said, there will be no last judgment. And he even said in his talk, I used to preach the judgment. I'm ashamed of it. And he said, God does not punish sin. There's no devil. He said, there's no prince of demons. That's a personification of evil. No such being exists.
And basically said, that's foolishness.
Oh, yes. He said, his exact words were, that's mythology. The devil is mythology. And he said, drop all of that. He said things like, God cannot change because God is change.
Uh-huh.
So when I approached him personally and said, you know, I hear you saying God is not a judge, but in our creed, every Sunday we say Jesus will come again to judge the living and the dead. And right away he said, that is a very literal interpretation of the Bible. He says the literal interpretation does not honor God. He said there will be no last judgment. He said at the last judgment, God will appear to everyone in his glory to such a degree that no one will ever not choose God.
So and he's universalist.
This has become universalism.
Yeah. And, you know, I knew this would happen, that we would want to cover so much more than we have time to cover. But you've done a great job. We're very excited about a project you're working on coming up in the future that will bring you back and dig a little deeper into these things and explore them more fully.
Yes.
Tell our listeners where they can find out more about your work, and you even have a guide for dealing with centering prayer in a parish.
Oh, yes. My website is called newagedeception.com, and we've got lots of free resources there. And one of the free resources, is a document entitled Seven Reasons Why the Errors of the Centering Prayer Movement Should Not Be in Your Parish.
Well, Sharon, thank you so much for fighting this battle. It's so important. We do want people to pray. We don't want to condemn others in the church, but when false teachings are promulgated as true, and they do spiritual damage, we have to tell the truth and help people to escape these things and run to the good, which is found
right.
in the spiritual doctrines of the church and the catechism and the great riches of our spiritual patrimony. So thanks again, Sharon,
right.
and God bless you in all you're doing.
Thank you so much. God bless you.
And thank you both, Sharon Lee Giganti and Dan Burke. You can read more about the commentary, Why Centering Prayer Falls Short of True Intimacy with Christ, on ncregister.com. And hey, do you know of anyone who may be interested in this topic? Point them to ncregister.com and click on the radio tab to listen or even to download the show. All Register radio shows are archived there. On behalf of Jeanette DeMello, Dan Burke, Father Raymond D'Azusa, Sharon Lee Giganti, Tom Price, and all of us here at the Register and at EWTN Radio, thank you for joining us. This is Elena Rodriguez, and we will be here again next week for more of Register Radio.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.